Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 90 for the 26th of June, 2010. I am David McVeigh, your venerable host who's been here for 90 episodes now. 90 episodes. Wow. We're fast approaching that 100th episode. I'm very excited. And I am joined in studio today by Josh Philpott, as always. How are you, Josh?
I am great. Fine. Fantastic. Second coffee in.
Everybody's raring to go. Two coffees.
Raring to go.
And just Shane,
point me in the right direction.
You're pointed in that direction. Stay right where you are. And Shane Gregory, how are you?
Very well, thank you. I don't need coffee like other people.
He's just naturally high on life.
Yeah.
All right, you can keep telling yourself that. I'll stick to my coffee. Thank you very much.
All right, so who are we? What do we do here? This is the Geek Actually Podcast. It's basically your weekly dose in geek. We do a bit of tech. We do a bit of entertainment. And this is actually going to change in the next couple of weeks. Now, we were going to save it for our 100th episode, but in the next couple of episodes, so just if you subscribe to this feed, do nothing. Everything will stay as normal. If you want the film and television aspect of it and the after show aspect of it. But in the next couple of weeks, the tech section will be divided up and it will become its own show, and that will go onto the old Geek Actually Tech feed. Now, the reason we're doing this before the 100th episode is because the Geek Actually Tech show, which hasn't had a new episode in weeks, has gone ballistic. People are downloading it like crazy, and I just think, well, we can't just leave them hanging there. So we have to do something. So I can't wait another 10 weeks. We're going to have to do this soon. So I'm going to make the call right now. Josh, how does episode 93 sound?
93 is good.
93 is good. Okay. So from episode 93, this show will be rebranded. It won't be called the Geek Actually Podcast anymore. It will be called Film Actually. And the tech show will be called Tech Actually. And then the Geek Actually show will be the after show.
And awesome.
Now, for those who come in live to watch it, nothing really changes because we're going to record them back to back. So we'll record the tech show, then we'll record the film show, and then we'll go straight into the after show. It's just that they're going to be broken up into sections so that when it goes onto the audio feed, it is three separate shows. So just to let you know, so as far as the live show is concerned, nothing really changes. We're just going to break. It's already in two distinct halves. We're just going to literally split that with a physical split with different introductions. Okay, that's not right now, though. That's in 3 weeks. So we will come back to that in 3 weeks. So just be prepared. That's all going to happen. And then, of course, the after show will be the after show for the whole thing and will be just a geek out where we can talk tech, film, anything. So anything goes in the after show. That's just geek. Okay, now, this week's show, we got Green Hornet news. It's been a few weeks. It's been a couple of months since we've said that, since I've harped on Green Hornet. We have some Green Hornet. In fact, we have better than Green Hornet news. We've got a Green Hornet trailer. And so we're going to actually play that trailer, and we'll give our opinions on that as we get a little bit closer. We also have Predators, the new international trailer, which is quite frankly phenomenal, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. It's a very trailer-heavy show, because on top of that, we got one more trailer. I dumped a trailer that Josh thinks we're doing, because we had a Resident Evil Afterlife trailer, which really is crap. And
do I look offended?
You don't look offended at all, but the point is that we all know the comic book writer Warren Ellis.
Oh, yes.
Warren Ellis also wrote a comic book called Red.
Oh, yes.
Yes? Yeah. They turned it into a film, and I have the trailer.
Oh, good. Finally, a trailer.
Woo. And the trailer for Red actually looks fantastic. Now, I haven't read the comic, so I can't be critical against how it compares to the comic book. But as a film, it looks like a lot of fun. And anytime we can see Helen Mirren running around with high-powered rifles, I'm in. All right? So I'm there. Okay, and in tech news, look, everything is kind of dominated in tech news by the fact that we have a new prime minister. And we're going to say, why is that tech news? Well, because with a new prime minister comes a new cabinet. Part of that cabinet, guys, is Stephen Conroy and the communications minister. Now, we don't have any answers yet, but we have some speculation and some talk. And we're going to have a little bit of a chat about where we see or what we see this happening, what going on with this. We have some other tech stories as well, so if that doesn't take off as well as I hope it will, we have other things to fall back on. And later on, of course, we are going to review the new Pixar film, Toy Story 3, and we're going to ask the very simple question, which is, does it succeed or does it fail in the third part? Does it fail with the third part curse? Like films like Spider-Man 3, Lethal Weapon 3, X-Men 3, Karate Kid 3, Superman 3. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. All right. And the part threes never seem to work. Okay. And we're going to find out whether or not Pixar managed to break that curse. Okay. Okay, now, the other thing I want to say, and this
We just got reminded of Matrix Revolution as well.
I am Matrix Revolutions as well. Thank you very much.
Now, respect, brother.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing that I want to mention here, and this is actually for our audio listeners more than our live listeners, because audio listeners don't get the after show for 3 days. All I want to say, though, is listen to the audio show this week if you're interested at all in the Supernova Expo that we went to. Our after show is dominated by Supernova this week. It's actually, normally the after show is not a structured event. This time it is. We have a lot of video from Supernova, and we're going to be playing a lot of video. And all those videos, by the time you listen to the after show, will be on YouTube. They're not on YouTube yet because we're going to play them on the show here first. So when you do download the after show, make sure you go and watch the accompanying videos that go with it. Okay, all of that being said, let's get into tech news. All right. sorry, cold, remember? Okay. All right, so Julia Gillard, this all kind of happened very interestingly on my birthday, on the 24th. We had Labour basically implode on itself, and Kevin Rudd removed as Prime Minister of the country, and Julia Gillard was unanimously voted in. Now, I just need to make something very, very clear here before we go any further, because there's already been people on Facebook and so forth saying, oh, but, you know, she's not even elected as the Prime Minister and blah, blah. Actually, she is. All right. And let's make this very clear, because Australians in particular seem to have forgotten how their political system works. And this, I blame this on John Howard, because it's become such a popularity contest with the leader that we have forgotten that we actually use the Westminster system of politics. When you actually vote in an election in this country, you don't vote for the Prime Minister. You vote for the person who is standing in your area. Mm. So Julia Gillard was elected exactly the same way as Kevin Rudd was elected in their area. They are the representative for that area. The person who is Prime Minister is selected by the party. And they can change that at any time by a vote behind closed doors. That's got nothing to do with the voting public. We didn't vote for Kevin. Unless you lived in Queensland in his district, you didn't vote for Kevin. All right?
Aww. All right.
So, yeah, you voted for a party. And unfortunately, that party has decided that Kevin could not win the next election. His numbers were falling. They took a gamble, and they decided that they just didn't think he could win. And so they took a vote. Julia Gillard took the place of him as Prime Minister. Their numbers have already taken a spike. She is very popular. And the question is whether or not that spike will last, or whether it's just that whole honeymoon period. So we'll see. How does this relate to geeks, though? And that comes down to Stephen Conroy. Now, Stephen Conroy, as we know, is our esteemed ICT minister, NBN minister, communications minister, however you want to put it. Now, this man is responsible for the National Broadband Network success. He's doing very well on that, and he is being praised for that. And I have no problem with the way he's handling the National Broadband Network. He is also the minister who is responsible for the internet censorship filter. Now, this is a slightly different issue. Now, I find that his zealotness towards this internet censorship filter is nonsense. And he actually, I've got an article here which I love, which, now you've got to bear with me, I've got lots of paper here, but there's actually one particular article I have here which actually talks about the fact that he outright lies. Here it is, this is it here. We actually have a person, Gizmodo has been doing a campaign to try and get Senator Kate Lundy the position as communications minister. Now, when you start digging on Kate Lundy, now I actually have a picture of Kate Lundy as well, by the way. Oh, by the way, before I go any further, I think we all know what she looks like. here's Tilda Swinton. Okay, so, oh, I'm sorry.
If you squint really hard, it actually does look like
it. It does look like it. No, I'm sorry. That's our Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, and I shouldn't be so disrespectful. But, however, more importantly for us as geeks, this is Kate Lundy. Now, Kate Lundy, and I got a photo I've got to show you guys in a minute, but I got to explain this before I show you this photo, because this photo will make you laugh, all right? Kate Lundy is very, very interested in technology. She is very, very knowledgeable about technology. She understands how it works, and she understands how the internet works, and she has been very vocal about all of this her entire career. Now, why she wasn't made the communications minister in the first place, I will never know. All right, she is so much more qualified for this position than Stephen Conroy. But Stephen Conroy was one of Kevin's boys. You know, they're all, and I harp on this a lot, but they are that very ultra-religious, very ultra-conservative religious right, and they all stick together like a boys' club, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I will like to point out right now, I look at this and go, finally, we might have separation. Julia Gillard is not married, she's childless, and she's agnostic. And so you sit there and look at it and go, we might actually have a prime minister for the first time, I think, that I can ever remember, possibly in history, who doesn't bring religious rhetoric into politics, which is, it's not meant to be there, all right? There's always supposed to be a separation of church and state. Otherwise, we become a theocracy, and we don't want to be a theocracy, all right? All right, so Kate Lundy, I don't know what her religious stance is, but she is one of the only ministers who has actually publicly come out and been against the internet censorship filter, against her own party. And she has actually said that the way it is being set up, she disagrees with. And she thinks that she has no problems with there being an internet censorship filter, but she believes it should be opt-in like the European system. Mm. If people choose not to have it on their system, they should be allowed to take it off. I respect this woman a lot. And I got to show you this photo. This is from CBIT, which is our computer conference that happened here earlier in the year. And this is Kate Lundy and Stephen Conroy at CBIT. Now, just look at the expressions on their faces. I don't know, where are we? Where's the photo? Here it is. All right, so we've got Kate Lundy looking like she's very interested in what's going on, and she's, you know, paying attention. And we've got Stephen Conroy
looking at a mark on the floor
with his lip up, like he's like, "Me, whatever. Why am I here?" it's like, what is that expression on his face? And I just came across that photo. I thought that is just brilliant. That is so good. Anyway, Kate Lundy is the possibility, and look, Gizmodo is really pushing hard in this, and they're saying that if you're going to reshuffle the cabinet, she should be the technology minister. There are arguments, believe it or not, against this. Mm. Now, let's take a look at some of these arguments. First argument basically comes in the form of the National Broadband Network, which is that Stephen Conroy is integrated, deeply, deeply integrated into the entire National Broadband Network. He's the one who just brokered the $11 billion deal with Telstra, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. He's the one who is actually making this thing happen. He's the one who's making all the contacts. So there has been talk that what if we split the portfolio? And for me, this actually makes a lot of sense. And I don't know about you guys. Split it so the National Broadband Network is its own portfolio. Give that to Stephen Conroy and let Kate Lundy take the ICT position and handle the rest of it. You know what I mean?
I would be okay with that because, I mean, dude, he may be a bit of a child and he may know nothing about, you know, how to do anything relating to technology, but what he does know how to do is business. So
absolutely. And there was actually somebody saying that. There was somebody actually saying that he should take over as the finance minister because he is a little brown man accountant, you know? But no, I think, okay.
God, he would look so perfect in that position.
It would be like a Dilbert comic. Yeah. Yep. All right. What is the status of the Australian internet censorship filter at this point? According to the Sydney Morning Herald on the 18th, so this is before Rudd was taken out of office, but according to this article, they basically say that it is actually on a list. Senator Ludlam has actually said that there is basically a list in Scott Ludlam said that there is Greens communications spokesman, Scott Ludlam has said that they've basically got a list which is toxic subjects, and they actually refer to it as toxic subjects. Politically toxic subjects. And these are the things that you don't want to go to an election with. Right. And apparently the internet censorship filter is on that list, right? And they're basically saying that it hasn't been announced absolutely yet, but there is talk that it is probably being shelved until after the federal election anyway, because it's too toxic to go to an election with. Now, that is, of course, depending on whether or not they drop it altogether. Now, if you change the communications minister, theoretically, and if now I got one thing I got to say is Julie Gillard has been very quiet about the entire internet censorship filter. You could say that she was the deputy. Bless you. You could say that she was the deputy leader and she would have been behind it all. But anytime we ever heard anybody talk about it, it was always Stephen Conroy or Kevin Rudd. Julie Gillard's never really publicly come out and said what her position is on that. And so I'm wondering if now that she's leader, whether she just says that's not going to happen. You know, this is speculation. We don't know. What does the chat room think of all this? Popshot says he's such a child in that pic. He is. I will actually put that picture on the post with the episode. Because I think the audio listeners deserve to be able to see that picture. Because it is fabulous.
We still don't have any information on the R18 discussion.
No, the R18 discussion is actually not part of this, not part of the federal government. It's actually the state attorneys general. What I am, there is part of me, I know this is just dreaming, but there is part of me that kind of goes, new federal government. Julia Gillard could turn around if she wanted to. She could turn around to the attorneys generals and basically say, dudes, get it together.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she could turn around and say, what the hell are you waiting for on this? And reconvene them.
Yeah.
You know, because the bottom line is their arguments for not putting it through are stupid. Their arguments for not putting it through are bizarre. I mean, for lack of a better word, they had everything they required for that meeting. To turn around and say they didn't have enough information and that it was being, you know...
Dude, as I wrote in an article I was doing recently, I basically had outlined the fact that it's interesting because their argument is double-sided. You actually can't win that argument because they're saying they want to hear from other groups. But the problem is if other groups answer, then they'll be put in the class of gaming because they will be... commenting on gaming.
That's right.
Therefore,
you get
they
know,
become gamers.
It's a catch-22 no-win situation.
There is actually no way for us to actually in any way win that. So
I agree with you 100%. And the whole R rating thing was political dynamite. They rolled the dice hoping that gamers would be apathetic to it, as they always are, and instead the gamers came out in force, and they changed the rules. You know, and that was it. They changed. The bottom line is that they didn't like the answer they got, and so they decided to change the rules. Now that we don't have a religious right leader, maybe something might be able to be done about it. I don't know. I don't know. It's actually out of the federal government's hands. So now we just had where is it? Raggy actually said he doesn't think they'll shuffle the cabinet this close to an election. That's where I actually think you're wrong. I think they will shuffle the cabinet because if they've got things like toxic lists, they don't want to go to an election with people like Stephen Conroy on the front bench. Stephen Conroy is a toxic subject, you know, and they're going to have issues with. I don't think they'll do a major reshuffle. I think they'll keep a lot of people in the same place. People who aren't in the limelight won't be a problem. Julia Gillard really has to look at the image overall of the party, and the overall image of the party at the moment is conservative, and they're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be the Labour Party, you know? So, yeah, they're going to have to do something about that. Anyway, those are just some of my thoughts on all of this. If you want to read up on Kate Lundy, there are millions of articles, and on the show notes I've actually put, I think, 5 different articles that are about this. If you don't know who Kate Lundy is, have a look at her. As far as we are concerned, as far as geeks are concerned, she is somebody we need to look at. All right, she is on our side. So I think it is definitely worth having a look at Kate Lundy for her what she does. And in fact, on one of the links I've got, there is actually a video which talks about her history and stuff. And really interesting because here is a woman who has basically skipped through politics without being heavily recognized, and yet she is world-renowned for knowing her shit about communications. So why, as I say, she's this incredibly overqualified person who hasn't been used in the field that they should be used in. So I do want to see what happens there. Now, the other thing I just want to say very quickly, though, we rag on Stephen Conroy a lot, and he deserves it. There's no doubt about it. But an article on Computer World this week did actually say that the telecommunications companies have actually congratulated Stephen Conroy, and we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the National Broadband Network is kicking off really well, and he has done some amazing things to get this done, and it looks like it is all going to happen, and it is going to happen under budget, and it's going to happen on time, and we have to pat him on the back for something.
Yeah,
look, you know, he is doing a good job with that.
We've been needing that for a while, and if there's something he's finally done right, it's that, so...
Pop shot in our chat room and says we should get her flowers. Yes, I think we should do a round robin collection and send Kate Lundy flowers. Look, I tell you what, Pop shot, I'll make you a deal. If Kate Lundy does become the next communications minister, I myself personally will order flowers for Kate Lundy and send them to Parliament House, all right? And I will congratulate her on behalf of everybody at Geek, actually.
Nice.
So if that happens, I will do that. Not a problem at all. All right, so yes, look into Kate Lundy and find out more about her, because she is going to be one to watch in this space. We need to change the way we think of communications. As far as we think we are up there with the rest of them and everything else, I hate to say this, but Australia is always about 4 years behind in technology. Mm-hmm. All right. I will say one thing. We get the National Broadband Network off the ground. We actually make fiber to 90% of the houses in Australia. Mm. We are, for once, way ahead of America. Okay? Because America's broadband infrastructure sucks. Okay, everybody has cable, but it's this antiquated, old, aging system that is falling apart, and it's so fragmented that different people have different qualities. We would be on the forefront of broadband.
Yep.
You know?
Being charged $1 billion for a gigabyte.
Apparently not. And this is one of the next stories we've got here, which is that Telstra. Now, I'm actually at the same part angry as I am happy about this. All right. I explain the angry part first. The angry part is Telstra used to be owned by the government. It was the government carrier, government phone company. Excuse me. Under Howard's government, he sold Telstra off. He sold a third, and then later he sold off the rest of it. And so basically, it became this privatized company. And their argument at that time was everybody should buy shares in Telstra so you can own a piece of Telstra. I hate to tell you guys this. You already own Telstra. It's called taxes, right? It's a government thing. We already owned it, all right? So Howard spun a beautiful one around that and made everybody think that they were buying into something that they already owned. All right, so now we come forward a few years. Telstra has just sold, or we have just bought, actually. The government has just bought the entire infrastructure, hardware infrastructure, from Telstra. Now, the reason they did this, and this was a really smart move, and the only thing that pisses me off about this is we shouldn't have had to do this because we already owned it. But the why it's really smart to do this is that we now have all the pits, trenches, pipelines, and everything else that Telstra had. Now, what this means is when they roll out the National Broadband Network, they actually don't need to relay trenches. They don't need to put up new poles. We have all of that in place already. And we can just use those, which is going to save a great deal of money. Yeah. So for $11 billion, the government has bought the hardware infrastructure from Telstra. When this deal is finally all settled, because it's a multi-stage deal, but when it's all finally settled, Telstra will just be an ISP and a mobile phone company. Mm. It won't be the one and all monopoly-held telecommunications infrastructure. Now, so I'm part mad because the mad part says we shouldn't have had to buy it back. Okay, that pisses me off. But I do understand why they did it, and by saving this amount of money, which it would have cost double that to try and find ways to relay the fiber trenches. So the way the deal works is this. Under this deal, this is according to Sydney Morning Herald, the NBN Co., or the National Broadband Network Company, will pay Telstra to use its ducts, pipes, conduits, and space in its exchange for its fiber premises broadband network. Then Telstra will transfer all of the Telstra customers who are on Telstra broadband now to the National Broadband Network, which means, according to this, which I'm not quite sure about these numbers, but according to this, it means the National Broadband Network will start with 10 million customers. So it's an immediate burst straight onto it. Okay. Now, because they've saved all this money on doing this deal, means that the National Broadband Network will become cheaper. Okay, because they're not paying as much to build it. They can't expect you to pay more than you're already paying if you're a Telstra customer. So I'm assuming the prices will be in the same sort of line. It then says that Telstra will decommission. Oh, sorry. Telstra will transfer customers from its copper and its hybrid. Oh, 10 million for its copper, I guess. Yeah. From its copper and hybrid fiber coaxial cable networks to the new network in return for further payments. So part more of that 11 billion will come to them. And then finally, Telstra will then decommission the copper and cable networks. So once it's all in place, all the copper and cable that they already have laid will be decommissioned in favor of all the new fiber, and it will then concentrate on providing retail services and mobile and wireless services. So Telstra will just become another Optus, Vodafone, what have you. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to tell you, Stephen Conroy has been trying to break the back of Telstra for a long time. It's monopoly on this whole thing. Mm. Looks like he finally succeeded. So I think it's an interesting thing. If we're not going to have Telstra as the national broadband or national phone carrier, then they really don't deserve to be as big as they are, because there needs to be more competition. Yeah. When it was government owned, I didn't mind that they owned all the infrastructure because it was government owned. That was everybody shared onto that. The good news about the National Broadband Network, and this actually came up, and see what you guys think of this. This came up last week where they actually said, the National Broadband Network will actually offer the same competitive pricing to all services, which means that they're not actually working as an ISP. And this is the part that I actually like about it. They're not going to be the ISP. They're just going to be the infrastructure. So IINet and Telstra and Optus and all these other companies just rent the fiber line, and then they resell it back to you. So everybody will have exactly the same backbone. Everybody will have exactly the same connection, and all the companies can then dispute pricing and create a pricing for it. I think that is a really interesting way of actually doing it. I think that was always the problem with telecom or Telstra in the past, which was that the government owned both the service and the hardware. I think the government owning the hardware is a great idea, and let all the other companies provide the service. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right. I'm all right. I think that's about it. Let's move on to some just general tech news. I think you guys are going to love this one. Put the camera on you guys for your reaction. You guys know the Viacom YouTube case that has been raging for years, where Viacom has basically been suing YouTube, saying that there are millions of breaches of copyright and clips from The Daily Show and all this sort of stuff on YouTube. And they've basically been saying that they're suing YouTube as copyright, as a collaborator, basically, on the infringing of copyright, and it's their responsibility to get it all off and blah. It's been going on for years. Guess what? Viacom just lost this week. So finally, this finally happened. So according to this, U.S. District Court Judge Lewis Stanton said in his 30-page ruling, then this was a summary judgment. It didn't even go to trial. The judge basically just made the judgment and said, that's it.
Dude, but 30 pages.
With 30 pages saying that YouTube was protected against Viacom's claims of massive copyright infringement by provisions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The 1998 legislation provides protection for internet firms from copyright violations by their users, and the judge ruled that YouTube's actions, such as quickly removing infringing videos when requested, were in line with the act.
Damn right.
And so, of course, what does Viacom say? They've vowed to appeal. So it moves on. So finally, there is a resolution to that case. Now, this is not the only case against YouTube. Apparently, there's other cases in Europe and so forth that are also fighting on all this. But I think it's really good that this is the first step in the right direction. Basically, what they're saying is if copyrighted material goes on YouTube, it's not YouTube's fault. And it is up to the person who owns the copyright to find the infringing material and report it.
Dude, this is like tagging on a wall. You can't blame somebody for selling a can of spray paint. It's just freaking ridiculous.
You blame the person who actually did it. Then if YouTube then gets in contact with the person who put up the infringing material and removes the infringing material, they've done the thing wrong. Mm. They're just a provider.
If anything, they've done exactly what they should have
done.
That's exactly right. And you know what? If it wasn't YouTube, it would be somewhere else.
Absolutely. And I love this fact that there is a company in America called Public Knowledge. Public Knowledge is a Washington-based digital rights company. And the what's his name? Sherwin Tsai, who is the Deputy Legal Director of Public Knowledge, said they were really pleased with the outcome of this case. Mm-hmm. They said it shows that the current structure of copyright law works well for even the largest content hosting sites.
Mm.
And I think that's true. This is sets a precedent
for
everything. Well,
it's nice when you think of things like Pirate Bay and stuff like that that have been immediately demolished.
Well, Pirate Bay is a slightly different
issue.
Yeah,
I know that. But what I'm saying is we've seen so many wins in favor of people just getting rid of these things. It's nice to finally see somebody in the internet world to finally get a break.
Northy in our chat room has basically said, YouTube, free advertising for your content. Get over it. And Raggy has said exactly, Northy. This is actually true. Northy, I agree with you completely. I've never understood. People put trailers up on YouTube and they get taken down. Now, I've got to tell you, one of the biggest people who is involved in takedowns and everything is Paramount Pictures. And Paramount Pictures is owned by who? Viacom. All right? Yeah. And now, there was actually an interview with, I think it was the head of Paramount Pictures a while ago, who, when somebody said, what is the harm in people putting trailers up and stuff like that? They're advertising for your show. His answer was, because we want to control the marketing.
But...
And it's like, and that's the fundamental problem.
It doesn't make any sense, though.
No,
why do you want to control marketing? If marketing goes viral, there is no downside to it. You haven't done any
Tell
work.
Tell J.J. Abrams that.
Yeah, exactly.
Abrams that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like you haven't spent any money. You haven't, outsourced any people. You haven't given labor to any companies. Like, there's not a dime being released, and this thing is going everywhere. How can that possibly
be? It can't be a bad thing.
As someone that has studied business, how can this possibly be a downside?
All advertising is good advertising. You know, I mean, that's really when you come down to it.
Not even that. You're getting a crappy quality trailer. It's like, what? Because it's on one particular place, people have to cycle through there. Unless you have a deal with that particular site to make you lots of money for hits.
I mean, I can kind of understand it. I don't agree with it, but I can kind of understand his logic where he can say, if they're hosting the trailer, they actually get the numbers on it, they can actually see exactly how well it's doing.
You want to see the numbers, go to the YouTube clip and see views.
But that trailer could be up 75,000 times in different places on different sites, and they can't track them all, you know? So I can understand how he would say we want to control it, but I also don't agree with
him.
Because
you know
I say
what, Dave?
You want it out there.
Hey, you know what, Dave? I've got a better idea. How about instead of all that money that you were going to spend on the 10,000, sort of places to pull all this shit down and follow it, get those people that are standing in rooms checking for these sites to go around and find these clips and find out how many hits they're doing. Boom. You just found out figures.
Fair enough. I will accept that. They do control the marketing by the editing. Explain. Yeah, sorry, Raggy in the chat room. Explain that one, Raggy. All right,
want to know this next one, Dave. Please tell me about this.
Okay, well, while you're explaining that, let's talk about this. And I think what we need to do at this point is play this.
Wow.
Yes.
I have not seen that in a while.
No, I know, but we've got
it new... actually feels retro now.
I know, it does, doesn't it? But we have news from the trenches. It's a very small one, and it's not confirmed as in details-wise, but Google is planning to make a digital online music download service to directly compete with iTunes. They are going in the direction of, now I don't know if you, problem is in Australia we never had the service, but in America there was a company called Lala. Now Lala was a really incredibly unique service where you could stream your music straight from the service. So if you owned it, you could then go to Lala, type in the name of the song that you owned when you weren't on your computer, and stream it from any computer or device in its complete form for free, right? Because you already owned it. And what you could do with Lala is you could take your entire iTunes library and basically upload the contents of your upload library to Lala so it knows what you own, and then you could stream anything back on any computer from anywhere over the internet because you already owned it. Great service, great idea. Last year, end of last year, Apple bought Lala and liquidated it, right? Now, there was a lot of talk whether or not the Lala service was going to be integrated into iTunes as a service, and that would have been kind of neat. But so far, no word. Google is talking about something very similar to that concept. They're talking about a streaming service where you would basically have a subscription. And of course, where does it work perfectly on? It would work perfectly on your Android phones. funny that. Okay, so according to the quote here from Mashable, it says, at Google I/O, Google showed off technology that would allow Android users to stream music off their desktop computers right onto their phones. That's very cool and offers a glimpse of what a cloud-based subscription service may offer. While Android can support direct over-the-air purchasing from the Amazon MP3 store, the overall music player and music experience still doesn't quite have the finesse of iTunes and its integrated multi-device solution. That's what Google is trying to clear up. So the point is that all those Android users out there who feel a bit left out by iTunes are going to have their own music store. Now, this isn't the first competitor to iTunes, but the reason why it comes up as war news is because this is once again Google and Apple crossing blades at each other. Google already introduced a phone that was going to compete with the iPhone. They're every step of the way, they're really taking on Apple head to head. So we'll keep our eye on that.
Dude, I agree that we should keep our eye on that, but I'm really starting to get sick of this concept that Google just thinks everything should be clouded, because that's really starting to
annoy. I agree with you. Look, and I am not, and it's funny because there's lots of people who really live in the cloud. I don't.
Yeah.
I use some cloud-based services. I have a cloud-based hard drive that I do back stuff up onto because I have it synced with both my desktop and my laptop machine, and that makes it easy. I can store files there. But I'm not about to trust that service with everything on my computer. I still want to have a local product that I can work with. I still want to have local copies of my files. I don't trust the cloud that much. I'm sorry.
It's not even that, man. It's that this company then owns everything you own. So it's like if they decide one day that they want to remove it, you've got to wait until laws and court cases and stuff like that go through before you're allowed to use it again.
Yeah, well, they don't actually own it, but it is there. And if they close down, it's gone. It's as simple as that.
Dude, as a perfect example, remember the Microsoft phones a little while ago that just wiped.
Yeah, you wiped like, everything.
This
yeah.
is a perfect example.
Sidekick, the danger in Sidekick.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, and I mean, I'm not saying that you know, I'm not trying to be too up in arms about this, because I know once the technology advances, we're going to have to use it anyway. Because, I mean, it just seems to be heading that way. Everybody's moving towards the cloud, the internet, you know, Google.
Well, as I say, I will use the cloud partially. I won't use it completely.
I never want to see the end of physical media. And this is what I always worry about when I hear things
like
this.
Well, it's like everybody's going, oh, it's funny because there's a technology bubble. There are people who are in the technology industry and they look at it and they go, this is the way it is, right?
Yeah.
People only buy digital downloads. They only buy digital music. They only buy digital movies. Outside of that technology bubble, the real people, the real world out there, they're still buying DVDs at a rate of knots.
Yeah.
They're still buying DVD players. They're still buying CDs. Otherwise, we wouldn't be selling them.
Some people are just upgrading now.
Yeah.
Some people are just getting DVDs for
absolutely.
The first time.
And
just
I
getting
tell you,
a computer for the first time.
I'm a tech head, and I have bought music, and I have bought movies digitally, but I will always prefer to buy it as a physical disc. Why? Because there are times where I just want to grab a disc out and put it in. I don't want to have to worry about...
Or browse through your library. Sit there and actually look through.
That's right. I take great pleasure in sitting in front of my bookcase looking at all my DVDs and stuff and reminding myself of what I have. This stuff on the computer, for me, isn't real. You know, and that's the problem, is that a digital file on my computer doesn't feel real. It feels too fragile. It could be easily deleted. It could corrupt. You know, anything could happen to that. I'd much rather have that physical backup. I much prefer buying a CD, ripping it to iTunes, and putting the CD away.
Having both.
And having both.
Exactly.
You know? And
totally
that way I've
agree.
Still got the CD there. Shame.
Sorry.
never apologize. Just jump in.
No, I was just going to say, the Android OS is owned by Google.
Designed by Google, yes, absolutely.
So it's not Google. Just a Linux one.
No. Actually, let's specify. Let's be very clear. It is Linux. It is a variation of Linux again.
Yeah, but Mac OS is Unix.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is as Linux as Mac OS is to Unix. It is their own interface.
Yeah, the reason why I brought this up is, I guess, really the next logical step for Google would to be actually kind of design their own computers and make an OS for a computer.
Well, and this is Google's next step is Chromium, which is their Google operating system. But it is a joke because, as far as I'm concerned, it's a joke. I mean, there's people who are out there waiting for it, but it's designed for netbooks. Yeah. And basically what it is a web-enabled window to the cloud. Mm. And so as an operating system, I don't see that as an operating system. I see it as a browser.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Everybody sits there and goes, oh, Chromium, they're new. Even Google has said it's not an operating system that you can do real work on. Yeah. You know? And I look at it and go, why are you developing Chromium when you have Android?
Yeah.
Mm. Android can be easily adapted to netbooks.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
I don't understand why Chromium even is being developed, but you know, whatever. That's what Google does. They have more money than God. They can do whatever they want. All right, Jay Raggy has explained that. He's basically saying they control the editing of the trailer. People don't post re-edited trailers of new movies unless satire or spoof trailers. So basically, they've done their job. They've edited the trailer. They've made the piece of marketing tool, and then the fans are passing it around.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree with you. I don't understand why you wouldn't want that passed around.
Dude, and the other thing is that it's no different just because you take it off YouTube. Like, I mean, if physical disc media passing it around, putting on a USB,
but
giving
this has
it
been
someone
an argument
else
for a long time, which is people download movies and you sit there and say, what is the difference between somebody making a copy of something they recorded off of television and passing it to me, or recording it on VHS tape and passing it to me, you know? Yeah. And it's like, you wouldn't think twice about the VHS copy, but as soon as you put it into a digital form, they lose their freaking minds, you know? It's like, everybody loses their freaking minds. So, yeah, no, Raggy has also said that even though they're breaking the law, they buy a DVD, encode it, stream it on their media devices around the house. Funnily enough, Raggy, if you were in the States, you wouldn't be breaking the law. That's actually legal under American law.
Yep.
In American law, you are allowed to make one legal backup copy for this purpose. In Australian law, it is actually illegal to copy your CD. All these people who buy a CD, rip it and put it on their iPods have broken the law. It is illegal to make a copy of anything you buy. You don't own it.
Yeah.
You own the physical disc. You don't own the product. Yeah. And it's under Australian law, it is illegal to copy anything. And so if you copy your CD to your iPod, you've broken the law. And it's the most ridiculous law in the world. It's like you sit there and go, well, why do we even have iPods if, you know, and because, of course, they would say, but you can buy stuff from iTunes, you know?
Anyway. We just don't talk about it.
Breaking the encryption is illegal. That's true. That is actually a very good point. We'll specify that. In America, it is actually legal to make one legal copy of your DVDs for your collection unless you have to decode the decryption. If you have to decode the encryption, you're actually breaking the law to break the encryption. anyway. That's a very good point. I forgot that. Yes, you're right. As soon as you break that encryption, you've broken the law. Ah, my head's spinning. All right, let's get on to some film.
Trailer.
Let's go on to some film news, and we're going to start this as I haven't done for a long time, which is in Green Hornet news. I haven't done that in so long. All right, now, before we play this is the new trailer for the Green Hornet movie starring Seth Rogen. This came out this week. It came out a couple of days ago. And I'm just going to state right off the bat, before we even play this, I'm going to say that this is the movie that I was absolutely insistent on would never happen. Okay? I apologize. It's obviously happened. I'm wrong. It is coming out. And now I wish it never was. All right. So let's have a look at the Green Hornet trailer.
So this is what you want out of your life. Living legend inside of a Smith and Wesson, sliding out of the... This gives you a sense of fulfillment.
Drink?
I spend all night writing about the corruption of this town. And you do nothing.
For today's top story, newspaper mogul James Reed was found dead, leaving his son in charge of his media empire.
Sorry to hear about your father.
Hey, Kato. You knew my dad pretty well, right?
Now that he's gone, I'm thinking, I haven't done anything good my whole life. I'm not sure what I should do.
Wanna see something cool?
Whoa! You did that? What did you think of my father?
He was a complex man.
Think about this, Kato. We've been completely wasting our potential. This city needs our help. We could be heroes. Here's what will make us different. We will pose as villains to get close to the bad guys. That way, no one will suspect we're really the good guys.
I want you to take my hand, and I want you to come with me on this adventure.
I'll go with you, but I don't want to touch you.
Okay, you don't have to take my hand, but will you come with me on this adventure?
Okay.
Yes.
What do we call him?
The Green Hornet.
I'm Lenore Case. I'm the new secretary.
Perfect.
I want the head of the Green Hornet, and I want it tonight.
You know who you are? You're a human Swiss Army knife. Just when you think there couldn't be any more cool things, a new thing comes out.
What's this?
It's a gas gun.
A gas gun?
How does it even work? Let's roll, Kato.
Red light, stop! Stop! The camera got us.
Can I shoot one?
Okay.
I don't know what to really think of that.
I don't know. Look, I look at it and just go, I was worried about that production from the start, and that did nothing to relay my fears. So we won't talk too much about it because I think the trailer kind of speaks for itself. We've got people saying Seth is hot, laugh out loud, laugh my ass off. I don't know, guys. I'll wait for Blu-ray. Yeah, Raggy, there you go. That's me. Although... You sure you don't want to see that wonderful 2D to 3D conversion they're doing on it?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. All right, we're going to move through this pretty fast. We're running really long. Tech took us a little bit longer than usual. So we're going to run through some of this really quickly. First thing I want to say is the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie is coming, Josh.
Wait. We've done that before. We've talked about this.
We have, because, in fact, right at this very moment, Sean Levy is directing the film Real Steel with Hugh Jackman, which is based on the Rock'em Sock'em Robots. But apparently it's not really based on the Rock'em Sock'em Robots as we originally thought. It's based on an idea that is similar to the Rock'em Sock'em Robots, but it's not actually the Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Really? Do we need to do this?
Wait, do we even care?
The only thing that made this newsworthy, as far as I was concerned, other than the fact that they had a groovy picture of the Rock'em Sock'em Robots, was the fact that it's actually Mattel and Mendeville Films are working with director Wolfgang Petersen. Is he slumming it?
I don't know. We don't know yet. It could be. Okay. Is it animated?
No, I don't know. It says Wolfgang Petersen to develop a film based on Rock'em Sock'em Robots, the 60s robot boxing toy. And it says, which already seems to have been the inspiration for the movie Real Steel. How many boxing robot movies do we need? Moving right along.
I'm going to just let my head think about that for a week. By the way, I found one reason that I'm going to go see Green Hornet.
Okay, what's that reason?
It has Edward James Olmos in it.
Oh, I like,
and that's
Edward
enough
James
for Olmos. Me. Yeah, that's no, enough I like, for me. I'll like go and see it based on that. And Edward Furlong.
Digital. How do you make a movie from a toy? Really, you're going to ask that question?
So should we move straight on to our review for this week, which is Toy Story?
Toy Story, or shall we talk about, let's see, Transformers, G.I. Joe, what else we got? There was others. Battleship is coming out soon. They can make Masters of the Universe. Silly question. Okay. Digital says, oh, shut up. All right. Breck Eisner, the only thing we're not going to harp on this because it's a remake of a film that I don't think they should be remaking anyway. Escape from New York, the director Breck Eisner has come out. Now, Breck Eisner directed the remake of The Crazies recently. Yeah. Says that he's a huge fan of the original film.
Of course, they all are.
They all say that. He says, as a kid, I absolutely love that movie, and Snake is such a badass. I agree. So don't make the film. Okay. All right. Simple equation. He says, the interesting thing about Escape from New York is that it was a comment on the urban decay and the suburban flight coming out of the 70s and early 80s. Conceptually, it's an idea that's not true today because of the different world we live in. So how the prison is created is going to be different from Carpenter's version. Apparently, it's not going to be New York.
Oh, wonderful.
So why is it called Escape from New York?
I don't know. Yeah. You should take a lesson out of Uwe Boll's thing and just take a thing about a guy running around an island shooting things and make it into a... what was it? A Western musical?
Instead. Damn straight.
Like, I mean, just why stop halfway?
Absolutely.
Just forget it. Let's take it to Africa and set it in a jungle.
Apparently, the new Escape from New York movie is going to, and I quote Mr. Eisner, where he says it's going to be about the anxiety of the world, and the anxiety of the existence post 9/11. Is there, especially the anxiety in Manhattan post 9/11? Plot wise, they're different. Emotionally, they're very similar. That's why it'll be interesting to tackle this movie to have a slightly different take. But with the same results, Manhattan is turned into a walled prison. But you just said you weren't going to make Manhattan a wall.
All I heard in that was wank, 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 wank. That's all I heard. I'm a director. I know what I'm doing.
The only thing that this film has going for it at this point, and it's not even confirmed, is that they may have their Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
Timothy Olyphant.
I still don't. No.
I can go with that, but he isn't confirmed, so he may not be.
I don't see it, dude. I'm sorry. I don't see that at all. No.
I like Timothy Olyphant.
Yeah, dude. I do.
Have you watched Justified?
Justified?
The new TV series?
No.
Okay, watch Justified and then come back to me on it. Okay?
Alright, fine.
Because Justified, he is Snake Plissken.
Okay,
alright. Alright, let's have a quick Marvel Comics news. Doctor Strange is finally going to get made.
I am really interested
in it. And so am I, because it will be the first Marvel production that is under the Marvel Disney banner. It won't be distributed by Paramount, it will be Disney produced. So this will be the first of them, so this will be the tester. This will be the one where we sit there and go, is Disney getting their fingers involved where they shouldn't be getting involved? According to this, the writers of the new Conan film, Thomas Donnelly and Joshua Oppenheimer, are going to write it. These writers were also previously hired, and they have written a script for Uncharted: Drake's Fortune.
Yeah, they're touching it. They've got their fingers in a lot of places I'm not particularly...
Yeah. The other thing I thought was very interesting about this, though, is... What?
Is an
Josh's machine. Oh, because you've got the Apple logo on the back.
Oh, right, yeah. No.
For those in the chat room.
That's actually Dave's.
It's my network, actually. And I couldn't bear to have. Digital, you'll agree with this. I couldn't bear to have this little Windows netbooks, so I had to put an Apple logo on it.
Really? And you're trying to tell me that you're unbiased towards PCs?
I'm a fanboy. I use both, but I'm a fanboy. Yes, next. That is a Behringer Stinger. All right. Now, the interesting point about this, because we've got to fly. We've got things to do. All right. The interesting point of this, though, is will the Doctor Strange movie ever happen, considering that over the years, these are the directors who have been attached to it and have failed? All right? Bob Gale, Wes Craven, David Goyer, Stephen Norrington, and Guillermo del Toro have all attempted to make Doctor Strange and have all failed.
Wow, dude, it's like it's like Don Quixote all over
again. It is, and it has been attached to Savoy Pictures, Columbia Pictures, Dimension Films, and Paramount.
Okay.
So it is definitely a production that has been having trouble getting to the screen. And I'm not surprised, because it is a very tricky subject matter. All right, I'm going to... oh, by the way, for those in our chat room, here's a picture of Doctor Strange for you. All right.
Wow.
Master of mysticism. All right, now, moving right along, I'm going to bring this up. Dum, 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 dum. I just didn't have the music lined up. Jaws turned 35 this week. On June 20th, 1975, Jaws was released onto the unsuspecting world.
And everybody should wait really, really in sort of high anticipation for the next DVD release, which will contain an extra 5 minutes of stuff you didn't really care about seeing.
What I want is the Blu-ray that has everything.
Ooh,
that's what I want.
That's a good call.
Now, the reason why we bring this up, because we don't usually give anniversaries on movies, is because Jaws was the landmark film in cinema history. Jaws was the birth of the blockbuster movie. No film before Jaws had ever made $100 million in its first run. Jaws was a film that came out on an unsuspecting market, blew the roof off the box office. It actually took $7 million in its first weekend, went on to gross $470 million around the world, and it was the highest grossing film of that time, not to be knocked off until Star Wars came out. It was Jaws that set the precedent for films to make $100 million in their opening, and if they didn't make $100 million in their opening, they were considered failures, even if they were profitable. The fact is, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider took $350 million around the world. It cost $100 million to make, and yet it's considered a failure. All right? This is because of Jaws. This is the world we live in now. Films don't make 2.5 times profit straight off the mark and cross the $100 million mark. They're not considered blockbusters. Every single year, tentpole pictures are made now for summer to hit that mark, and that is because of Jaws. So we needed to wish Jaws a happy birthday and a 35th anniversary, because it is a very, very, very...
Thank you for giving me Twilight.
Very famous film. I have a couple stills here for our live viewers. If you are just an audio listener, I do apologize. These are actually taken from Carl Gottlieb's book, The Jaws Log, which shows some behind-the-scenes stuff for Jaws. This is Bruce the Shark with Steven Spielberg in his mouth. And, of course, we have Bruce... being filmed, which is a great photo. I love this photo. Jaws Log, written by Charles Gottlieb, is available. You can buy it on Amazon or any decent bookshop. Fantastic book written. It's actually the diaries of Carl Gottlieb while the film was being shot, and it's probably one of the greatest books on film production, just purely on the day-to-day grind of a film ever written. It really is fantastic. Okay, last piece of film news, and then we are going to... Oh, wait a minute. No, we got a trailer, don't we? We got a trailer. We got a trailer. Predators.
Red.
Oh, you want to see Red? Okay, we'll have a look at Red first. All right, not a problem. All right, so Warren Ellis, writer, this is his new film version of Red. I didn't know anything about this, I have to say, until I saw this trailer, and now I've seen the trailer, I want to see it. So here you go. Here's Red.
This place looks fantastic, Victoria. How did you make the transition?
I love it here. I love the baking. I love the flower arranging.
They retire us.
You can't just flip a switch and become someone else.
What are we supposed to do?
I do take the odd contract on the side. I just can't stop.
Hi, this is Sarah.
It's Frank Moses.
Oh, hey. What's going on?
Not much.
Try a little bit more to the left, man. Yeah, it's just perfect.
Why are you trying to kill me?
There's still something wrong with this guy's head.
He was given daily doses of LSD for 11 years.
Well, in that case, he looks great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Don't you think we ought to discuss the fact that the CIA is being used as a hit squad? And they'll do whatever they can to find us and kill us.
We're getting the band back together.
Desky.
Red. Dude, that looks freaking awesome.
I love Helen Mirren. Let me just tell you.
Dude, Helen Mirren stole the show in that.
her wielding the machine guns, fantastic stuff.
And I see Reggie says that I see it has Morgan Freeman in it. Everything has Morgan Freeman.
That's right. It's not
just legit. Look, he's somewhere in the background.
It's not a legitimate film unless it's got Morgan Freeman. I think it's actually a contract in Hollywood at the moment. All right, I've got one more story here, and then we have another trailer, and we have to watch that trailer because we're going to have to wash this story out of our mouths. All right? It's a very simple thing. And basically, Hustler Pictures is proud to announce that they have just completed principal photography on their upcoming porn parody, This Ain't Avatar XXX in 3D.
What?
Using the most revolutionary state-of-the-art technology available in film, Hustler Video is eager to step up to the plate and launch forward with production of this ambitious and challenging parody title. It is in 3D, guys. This Ain't Avatar... XXX, the parody. Oh dear, and that is actually a still. These are.
I just have.
Let's watch Predators. What do you think? All right, here's the Predators trailer, and then we're going to get into our review. This, as far as I'm concerned, now. If you can see all of these trailers, by the way, embedded at geekactually.com. So for the audio listeners, you can go and have a look at these. As far as Predators is concerned, Josh will back me up on this because he's seen this already. This should have been the trailer in the first place.
Yeah. Look, it's fine. I mean, it's you need to continue to build hype. So, you know. Yeah,
this is a good trailer.
So this is a good trailer to follow with. I'm happy with it.
So we'll watch this trailer, and then we're going to get into our feature review. Here we go. Here's Predators.
Black Ops.
Mercenary.
you.
I'm the one you don't fuck with.
We need to work as a team.
Does this look like a team-orientated group of individuals to you?
What is this place?
We were chosen.
Chosen for what?
This planet is a game preserve. And we're the game.
They learn. They adapt.
We run or we die.
What's the alternative?
We're going after it. How do we kill them? However you can. You're the predator. Prey.
Nothing to say except for that is going to be amazing.
Right on, right on, right on. We're looking forward to that one, guys. All right. From the weird to the wonderful, let's go straight into a film review. Because, boy, following Predators with Toy Story is kind of an odd mix. Anyway, I should have thought of that when I was doing the show notes. All right, let's get on with this. All right, this week we are going to review Pixar's new effort, Toy Story 3. Directed by Lee Unkrich, the film was written by Michael Arndt, John Lasseter, John, Andrew Stanton, and Lee Unkrich. The film stars Woody, Buzz, Jesse, film stars Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Joan Cusack, Don Rickles, Estelle Harris, Wallace Shawn, John Ratzenberger, and Jodie Benson. But we have new people also joining the cast. These are the returning voices. Well, they are also now joined by Ned Beatty, Michael Keaton, Timothy Dalton, Whoopi Goldberg.
Who was Whoopi Goldberg?
Whoopi Goldberg was the Stretch. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, keep
going. And our favorite, and we'll explain in the spoiler section why he's our favorite. I can't tell you what it is yet, but it is Javier Fernandez Peña. And in spoilers, we'll come back to that. Now, as far as the plot is concerned, toys are back in this finale to the Toy Story tale. It is kind of like the conclusion to the Toy Story trilogy. Andy is 17, all grown up, and he's going to college. What happens to the toys? Is it the attic? Is it the trash? Is it donation? We're going to find out. And the toys find themselves donated to the Gulag, also known as a daycare center. Adventure ensues as the toys live in a post-Andy world and have to escape from the daycare center. And mayhem ensues. And it's all about a touching story of growing up and moving on. Mm. And I have to say, we're going to play a trailer in just a minute. We'll give a bit of distance from Predators. But I have to say that I really, really loved this film.
Yeah. I'm going to go on record basically straight out of the gate and say that, especially to Shane, I owe apologies. I had no faith in Pixar, and I should know better. And I'm really sorry. I'm going to eat a bucket load of humble pie and say... I really should have just thought about everything they've given me, and the fact that I kind of turned an eye to that and said that I don't see it working. Well, you know what? Every now and then, maybe I should have a little bit more faith.
And before we get to Shane's opinion on it, let's play the trailer, because it'll explain why you had no faith. So let's have a look at the trailer for Toy Story 3, and then we'll come straight back into Shane's comments on this. So here's the trailer.
Andy's going to college. Can you believe it? What are you going to do with these old toys?
Okay, calm down, guys. Let's just keep this in perspective.
Where is she taking us?
I should have seen this coming.
We'll be fine, Jesse.
Oh, I hate all this uncertainty.
New toys! Yeah!
Buzz Lightyear, at your service.
Welcome to Sunnyside, folks. You'll find being donated was the best thing that ever happened to you.
May I? Ooh!
Who's Velocistar 237?
Oh, that's just a dinosaur toy down the street. That's nothing. Let me just take care of that. Just a dinosaur.
Ken, we got guests.
So, who's ready for Ken's dream tour?
Let's show our new friends where they'll be staying.
Folks, if you want to step right this way.
Take my breath away.
Hi, I'm Ken.
Barbie.
Love your leg warmers.
Nice ascot. We can have a whole new life here, Woody.
We're Andy's toys.
Hey, what do you guys think of the new recruits? Any keepers?
I'll play. Is
that space guy? He could be useful.
Oh, I want to get played with.
Rex? They just love new toys now, don't they?
Oh, it was cold and dark. Nothing but sand and a couple of Lincoln logs.
I don't think those were Lincoln logs.
You got a play date with destiny.
He's looking for us. And he's looking for us.
Listen up. We're busting out of here.
Woody's no ordinary toy. He's brave.
We gotta get you home before Andy leaves tomorrow.
But the thing that makes Woody special is he'll never give up on you. Ever.
Hello?
You and your friends ain't ever getting out of here.
Ah! And what's important now is we stay together.
I'll never make it!
Where's Potato Head?
You would not believe what I've been through tonight.
All right, so we're going to get to Shane in just 1 second. The reason why you had no faith was because...
The trailer looks
the trailer sucks, quite frankly.
You know what? But Up's trailer wasn't that great either. Up's trailer... It's very hard to capture a Pixar film in, like...
I guess. Let's find it. Shane, what were your thoughts on Toy
Story?
All right.
Firstly, I have to say a huge thank you to Toy Story for concluding a trilogy so well.
I agree.
I don't feel the need that there should be a fourth one.
No. we'll get back to that.
Also, I have to thank Pixar because before you made all your big budget films, I was a huge fan of all your short films, which you did as well. And what I thought on this was... I could say this out of the two before the third one as well. It felt like a growing experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Like growing into the third one, there's more adult things.
Well, because we were actually thinking about it. I actually spoke with a guy at work. We'd both seen the film and we came in the day afterwards and we were actually talking about it. We were 10 when number one came out. Like, I mean...
You were Andy's age.
Exactly. We have literally, like, not, you know, the ages have been a bit skewed because as they go along, the story needs to be told. But when you watch this one, especially from sort of mine and kind of Shane's as well, our age group, it's kind of like when you get to that level, it's kind of... The story it's telling is kind of almost a reminder to us as well to not lose that part of yourself. And it's really lovely experience to kind of... go through that and see that when you watch this, you were the age where this was amazing to you because it was. It was about toys. It was about all the things that we cared about at that age.
Absolutely.
I also very, very much appreciate a good 3D animation film and how much time and effort they actually put into this. Even the small refinements that they did with like the animations, the way that Woody runs, the way that the toys walk.
Wait, Ken moves. Brilliant.
Yeah. Not only that, but just also the big budget set pieces that they did in this one, which is something I love the way that it starts out. I love that huge sort of action scene intro that they kind of do with the film because it's kind of like you thought that this was. You know, because this when it first came out, you look at Toy Story 1 now, and it's very simple. It's very plain. You know, all the backgrounds are as simple as they could make it because it was all about the front end and how good the models
looked at the time. Well, not just that. 1995, computer power was still coming of age. You know?
Oh, for sure.
Toy Story 1 was the first full-length computer animated film in history, and they set the bar. You know, it's like...
Absolutely. And when you watch those same characters... in these ginormous set pieces with big explosions and cars and things. It's like you watch that and it's sort of like almost like, oh, you thought we didn't have it, but we do.
I said to my lovely wife, Katie, when I came home from the movie, I said it was a unique experience because you take their first film, you take Toy Story, which even today still holds up very well. I mean, it's because... It's not always about the shading. It's not always about the lighting. It's not always about the modeling. What it is about is the animation and the character and the voices. And the voice casting was perfect. And the humor is perfect. Yeah. The storytelling is perfect. But Pixar also knows how to animate. Mm. They could take paper cutouts and animate them well. I mean, there's just they know nuance. They know detail. And they managed to capture that so well. Mm. And they did it again in this. And they're saying, so you take that original film, which we love so much, and you give it over to the course of time. Pixar has experimented. Because, I mean, you look at Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 2, and you look at Up, and you look at Ratatouille, and you look at, I don't know, take it as another example. What's another one that we can know? WALL-E, right? And they have actually been experimenting with pathos. They've been experimenting with nuance. They've been experimenting with sentimentality a lot with these films, and they've been really nailing it. Yeah. And then to take all of that experimentation and roll it back on their original creation and apply all of those things that we have been, we know Pixar can do to those original lovable characters, and it works so well. So you end up with a very, very touching, very emotionally connected Toy Story film. And you needed
the same, with all the things you would expect on top of that as absolutely. Well. So with the great humor, with the, you know, sort of the adult child kind of enjoyment level in it.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. And you actually, and I was about to say, you actually need all of that experience in dealing with sentimentality, because Toy Story 3 walks a very fine line, which is the story it's telling about what happens to old toys and, you know, the future and, you know, growing up and everything else, can walk into very sappy territory. It can walk into being over the top and people sitting there going, oh, really? It's just too much. You know what I mean? They walk that fine line and they succeed in spades because they know exactly which buttons to push. They know exactly where a scene goes too far, where it is too long, where it is too short, and they can actually just balance that perfectly to give you a quite frankly, I found the film quite overwhelming. I came out of it, and as soon as the credits rolled, I just looked at Josh and said, I freaking love that, you know? And as you said, you wanted to go straight back in and watch it again.
Oh, dude, I wanted to watch it again, and more than that, I just had a smile I could not remove for, 2 hours, just because it's just, it touches you in all the right ways, because it's like you've got the great level of sentimentality, as you were saying, in it. You've got the jokes and the humor, and there is that reliving the experience and finishing it off. It feels closed. It feels like the series is done, and it's just perfectly enveloped into this wonderful series that I, like, God forbid I ever do, but if I had a kid, I would love to show them that.
What do you mean, God
experience
forbid?
We've already spoken on this. My friends think I'm going to birth the Antichrist. So, yeah, no.
You're young.
I mean the truth is, it is a very difficult and sad time if you ever experience giving away your toys, which you used to play with at an early age. It comes to a point when you become more of an adult. Like, what am I going to do with these? Am I going to give them away to somebody? I'm going to hold on to them?
Yeah, and I think they handle that. I think they handle that topic really well, and at the same time, without sacrificing humor, the film is very funny in places. And in spoilers, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the specific humor, but and we'll move into spoilers pretty quickly because I think we want to talk about some of this stuff. But I just think that anybody out there who is at all doubting Toy Story 3, this is not Shrek. Shrek. No. Was a great first film, an okay second film, and they went downhill from there. And Shrek 3, Shrek 4, I haven't seen yet, but apparently it's not very good. Okay? This is not that. This breaks that 3 curse. This film is better than the previous entries.
Well, because they're doing it from a different angle.
Well,
When you look at the Shrek films, it's kind of like how the Scary Movie films went, where it's like you've got an idea and a concept for the first one, and it works, right? The second one is kind of continuing on that idea, whereas that was never, like, Pixar's vision was kind of a self-contained story using the characters from the original. So 2 didn't suck. Like, I'm sorry, but I thought 2 was very average.
I love 2, but yeah.
Yeah. And sort of as you get into 3, it just becomes...
Oh, we're talking about Toy Story, right?
Toy Story. Yeah. And when you get to 3, it's like... They've got an idea. They know what they want to do with it, and they want to finish it off. They've got an idea for an actual storyline. They've got an idea for what they want to overlay from all 3 films. They've put that together. When you go into Shrek was just pop culture references and another storyline. Like,
yeah, it was taking one joke basically and milking it out over many films. Whereas with the Toy Story films, we have a group of characters who have new adventures each time. And I love the fact that we have callbacks in this. So we have spoilers for Toy Story 2, but we have in Toy Story 2 the whole Jessie and her owner and how she ended up being abandoned by her owner scene, which was a really lovely, beautiful moment that showed about how childhood grows up and, you know, if your child leaves you. They take that concept in this film and expand it, you know, with the whole bear. What's his name again? The Huggin, what's his name?
And, or even just like little, almost dark tones where like when they're having the discussion at the start of the film, and this isn't spoilers necessary, where they're talking about where they want to go and what they want to do, you know, as toys to kind of, you know, move away from the situation. That is built in her head, and she's very vocal about that.
Yeah, that's right. She goes, and she actually says, it's that all over again, you know, exactly. and she feels that way. Yeah, this film really does work on many, many levels. Adults will get just as much out of it as children will, and I'm taking Little Geek to see it this weekend. He's going to absolutely, it's going to blow his mind. It's because he's a huge Toy Story fan, and this is just going to literally blow his mind. See, I look at Pixar's progression through the history of film, and I look at it and go, they have gone from strength to strength to strength. Yes, they have stumbled on occasion. I think Cars is not their strongest film, not for the animation, not for the quality of rendering that is still exceptional, far beyond anything else that was working at the time. Unfortunately, you run into a problem with Cars, which is that the cars just, you can't connect with them, you know? But what do I know? The film took $400 million around the world. People loved it, and the sequel comes out next year. So, you know, it obviously connected with younger kids. It didn't have quite that cross appeal. Bug's Life, I always kind of felt, was the distant cousin for Pixar, because even though when you watch it, it's really fun, when you're not watching it, you completely forget it even exists.
It's one of those strange little films. Bug's Life was fun once through, but you know, it was funny because they both kind of came out at the same time, that and Ants, and I've always been much more of an Ants fan.
Me too, because Ants was like a Woody Allen film.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I always liked Ants more, and Bug's Life is by far technically the better film, but Ants has this strange adult sense of humor to it that I really quite like. Yeah. Also, I think Bug's Life was wedged between two Toy Story films.
Exactly.
And so it was kind of like the holdover in the middle while they were making another Toy Story film, so... Anyway, I'd just like to point out that Brad has hit our chat room. This is kind of off topic for a second. Welcome, Brad. Brad has wished me a happy birthday. Thank you very much. And he also wants to congratulate you on the new DLC show, which launched this week.
Thank you.
And says it was really good and he enjoyed it. Very nice to see you, Brad. And he says, tell Beardy happy birthday. Thank you very much. Shrek died fast. Yes, Northy, I agree with you. Shrek died fast. It had one really, really stellar moment, which was the first film. Second film has funny moments in it.
But it's
just not strong enough all the way through. And then the third film was just awful. That's one of the reasons why I haven't seen the fourth film yet. It's because the third film was awful. Let's talk about the 3D very quickly before we go into spoilers. The 3D in Toy Story 3, what'd you think?
It wasn't a standout for me. Like, I mean, it was everything I had expected. Like, but there was none of those, like, as we've said before, the best kind of 3D for me is the subtle kind, which is the kind where it just kind of enhances the picture.
Which is what Pixar does.
Exactly. There was none of those, you know, unnecessary kind of handout towards the camera things or, you know, items necessarily flying at us or anything like that. It was all about just tightening up the look and making it more of a layered experience.
Absolutely. And there was actually if you look at the 3D and Up, it's the same thing. It's this, rather than stuff jumping out at you, it's just to give the world depth. And Pixar is really subtle about that, and they're really subtle about their 3D, and they're doing it really well. I freaking loved the 3D in this film. I just love the fact that it just gave it that texture and that
look. It gives texture. I mean, I'm not going to use it as a selling point for the film.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
You could see this happily in 2D and wouldn't miss it.
Exactly. Like, you look at something like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. That film was made for 3D. Yes. Like, it was made to just throw the images out at you.
Cheeseburger.
absolutely. Like, That's what I would say is 3D that not only works, but is a selling point of the film. Whereas this is just, if you watch it in 3D, it just makes the experience a little bit, you know, sort of more.
Yeah, I agree. I think
you've got a couple of extra bucks, you know.
Why not see it in 3D? Yeah. Absolutely. Shane, what did you think of the 3D?
Yeah, I think it's 3D without trying to go over the top. Kind of similar.
It reminds me a little bit of Avatar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Avatar was kind of the same. It didn't rely on 3D tricks.
Yeah.
It was just there to add texture to the world. Funny thing is, I have still yet to watch Avatar all the way through in 2D. It's kind of like I saw it four times in 3D, and now I kind of find myself not being able to revisit the whole film without being in 3D. It's very strange.
It's not,
I don't know.
It's, the depth is kind of when you watch it, because I've watched it at home now and also on my phone. And when I watch it, it's kind of like, yeah.
It's not that, because now it's not a cinematic event. It's just a film. And you start looking at it going, as a film, Anyway, we're not reviewing Avatar. We'll come back to Avatar. We'll revisit Avatar when the proper DVD gets released and proper Blu-ray gets released. But I thought Toy Story was really, really, really fantastic. I love the short film before it. Pixar always puts a short film. Yeah. Day and Night was terrific.
Really poignant for them. It had a real, a thoughtful tone.
And
towards
that
the end.
Was a real 3D experience.
Yeah.
Because that had all of that depth under the surface, which was just beautiful.
It was such an odd film. I the whole time I was just like, seriously, what do you guys take? Because I want some. It's like the most creative things you will ever see come out of those kind of videos. And it was also great to see it change, because like we've seen so many of the kind of little cute animals and stuff like that, to kind of change it up and just do something as bizarre as Day and Night.
It was really wonderful. Touching, and it was this beautiful combination of traditional cell animation and 3D. It just works so well. What do you think of that, Shane?
Yeah, I really liked it too. I thought it was very different. It's not like previous versions where I remember faintly it was, the other shorts were pretty much shot in 3D, and they were just making it like a big joke, like a 5-minute joke, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
A funny end to the short.
Yeah, like I mean, probably my two favorites would be. I think that one goes in there now because I like something that, you know, sort of off the wall and something different. That and actually the one from Up are my two favorites.
Oh, the clouds! The clouds are fabulous. Yeah. The other one I really like was before Ratatouille, which was Lifted, where the UFO comes to try and take the person out, and they've got a trainee driver, and they can't get the person out of the bed. I don't know if you've seen it, but it is just this, it's just like a slapstick comedy though, but it is really funny. I also absolutely adored. Now I can't remember which film it was in front of, but it was The Magician and the Rabbit in the Hat.
Yeah.
Which I think is just, that actually made me laugh out loud.
Oh my God, yes.
I was actually guffawing out loud watching that one. That was just brilliant. Very clever stuff. Look, I think I'm going to see you later, Brad. Apparently Brad's got to go. See you later. All right, let's go ahead and rate this really quickly, and then we'll go into some spoilers and talk about some specific scenes. I'm going to say absolutely 100%. Do not wait. Go to the cinema. Make it this weekend's film. Just go.
Yeah.
Enjoy. You'll love it. And I would actually say to you, you don't need to watch the first two Toy Story films to enjoy it, but you will get so much more out of it if you invest your time, watch the first two, and then watch this one as the conclusion.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the other ones, they are important parts of Pixar's history. If you like any Pixar film, you should watch that. Mm. And if you have even the smallest level of sort of child left inside you, this film is just the most...
And look,
if you've killed your
inner child, this may resurrect it.
Yeah.
This may resuscitate it.
If anything could. If anything could.
This may just resuscitate that inner child in you. Shane.
I would say it doesn't really matter what type of person you are. If you just want to go into a film and walk out with a really nice feeling, just go and see it.
And this film is a comedy. It's an animated film. It's an adventure.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of a horror film in places. Yeah. It's a prison escape film. It's got everything. And it's got a great pace. It keeps moving. It never actually has moments where you sit there and go, can we really just get on with this? It really does flow really well. Josh, did you have any more before we go into spoilers?
No, I'm looking forward to spoilers.
Let's go into spoilers. If you haven't seen Toy Story and you don't want to know anything about it, you might want to just stop listening if you're in the live room. We'll only do spoilers for about 5 minutes or 10 minutes, so it's not very long. If you are listening to the podcast, pause it at this point, see the film, and then come back to us. We're pretty much going to finish on this anyway. So let's go for it. Josh, you can go first.
First off, just like I was saying, the intro scene, thought fantastic sort of way to get us into the film.
Very reminiscent of the second film with the whole Buzz Lightyear short film.
Yes.
Where he's on the planet doing all the fighting and everything.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of just that really kind of boom, we're in the action, let's go.
And you're kind of sitting there, quite frankly, in the cinema going, what the fuck?
Because no, dude, I absolutely, from the start of that scene, knew that it was him playing with toys. Because it was just, it was that bizarreness that only children can make up, where it's that whole kind of like, and now there's a pig spaceship. And it's like, it doesn't need to make sense. You're 10. You just do it, and to hell with if people don't like it.
Popshot says he raped his inner child. Popshot, you are a child. All right, keep going. All right, Shane.
Oh, yes. I'll just quickly do a few small things. Number one, nod, nod, Totoro.
Ah, yes, 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 yes.
Nod, nod to Mr. Miyazaki.
Yes, actually, well picked up by Shane, actually, when we walked out of the film, which is that Disney's collaboration with... what's his name?
Miyazaki.
Where their collaboration together recently with a few films, the Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro character, is one of the toys that you run into, one of the new toys, which I thought was quite a good wink to the camera. That was very, 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 very well done.
And apart from that, my two most hilarious films, hilarious scenes in the film. One would have to be when Mr. Potato Head loses his potato.
Oh, my God, yes.
The Mr. Pita Bread Head. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Animated, too. Just, like, the flopping around of all the parts as he runs along, and bits where, like, with the bird.
The bird starts pecking
Where the bird starts pecking him, and he has a fight with it, and him slinking across the window where he would kind of get smaller and then grow wider and then get smaller and grow wider. Oh, awesome.
Actually just looking here online right now. Slash Film has put up Toy Story 3 Easter eggs. We're saying how they do nods to everything else. They actually have an entire article written up about the various Easter eggs. In fact, on one of the street signs, and it's kind of ironic, really, because they've cancelled the film, but there was actually a street sign on one of the roads that said Newt Crossing, and it had the symbol of the Newt, and Newt's been cancelled, obviously, since then. But Sid... Remember the kid from the first one?
Oh, yeah.
He was the garbage man. Yeah. He was wearing the same skull t-shirt.
That's awesome.
And he's the one that picks up the bear at the end and ties him to the front of the truck. He's still torturing toys.
Does that mean, if that was the case, was there one of those bears in the room in the first one?
I don't know. We'll have to go and have a look.
Oh, dude, I am so looking that up.
Got to go look that one up. But apparently they're just go crazy. If you go through it, there are little Easter eggs, posters on the walls, characters in the background like Miyazaki's characters. It just goes on and on. There are so many. There's the car from Cars is on a calendar in the back of Andy's room.
Yes, did see that one.
You know, so it's like this Easter eggs all the way through it.
It just shows the level of detail that goes into a Pixar film. There is just no part of the film that isn't like triple checked before they put it out. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I personally thought... one of the things I really do want to talk about now, we're in spoilers very quickly, is that climactic scene. Because I thought that Pixar handled that so well, which is where they are in the compactor and everything. They've got to that point where they are headed towards the fire.
Yeah.
And they're scrambling, trying to get out. And there's that moment of resignation where they just kind of realize that's it. They're done. Yeah. And I thought that was so emotionally well handled because they always talk about how Woody doesn't give up and he is the last one still scrambling. Mm. And when he finally sees everyone holding hands heading towards that furnace.
Yeah, it was a very beautiful
scene. And you have that touching moment where he finally just holds hands and resigns as well. And of course there's wonderful conclusion to that with.
Exactly.
Claw.
I do like those little guys. And it was nice to see them actually do something instead of getting in the way like they do in every other freaking film. Scene in those entire movies.
But that scene, I think, really does sum up for me how mature Pixar has become. That they can handle that. And, of course, the finale, the last scene, with him giving the toys to the little girl. And how touching that scene is, especially when he hands Woody over.
I also really love the fact that they're aware of their responsibilities as kind of probably the leading... Like, they are the and I mean, I know Disney is still a part of this, but I'm saying they're the Disney of the generation. It's like, we went into cinemas to watch Aladdin and so on and so forth. Kids nowadays go to watch Pixar films. That's what they do. They're really aware of that.
Every single year... Pixar are the ones who set the benchmark.
Exactly. You know? And the thing about that is they in throughout all their movies, with maybe the exception of Up, which we've already discussed, they're very good at handling those scenes where a bad guy needs to be dealt with or something like that. And I was really, really glad that at one stage in the movie where the bear gets pushed into the rubbish bin, people understand that when they watch the scene, that that wasn't the resolution and they didn't finish that there, because it really didn't feel Pixar.
No.
And I knew there was going to be some further conclusion to that, because Pixar just don't finish a scene like that. They're aware that they're telling the generation how not to act.
Yes.
And the idea of kicking him into the rubbish bin was, I was kind of like, oh, no, come on, you're better than
there
that.
There has to be more to it.
Yeah, and no, I was really glad that they finished that the way that they did.
Well, now, let's just address very quickly Ken. Actually, it's not so much Ken I want to address, although I think the whole metrosexual nature of Ken is just magnificent with his clothing and everything. I mean, it's just brilliant. I was actually just talking about the quality of the animation. This is something that Shane can weigh in on. How clever Pixar is. There's actually two scenes in particular I want to talk about that are just like, for me, that's the detail level and how brilliant they are at their animation. One is when Ken makes his appearance, and even when Barbie does it later, everybody who is involved in it, when they come down the elevator on the Ken's dream house, it even has kind of that kind of shaky, rocky feeling to it, like it doesn't work very well. Little detail. And my favorite moment, I think, in the entire film, a favorite little moment in the entire film, where Andy in the flashback in the opening scene is watching TV, eating popcorn, and he puts a piece in Rex's mouth, and then it falls out.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you sit there and go, that is just such a small, subtle little detail. Mm. And to have that little piece of popcorn fall out of the mouth afterwards, you sit there and go, boy, they are paying attention to everything in this film, you know?
Yeah, there's not one bit.
And that's about those two little things, really, for me.
No, dude, and shot work. Shot work's another thing that Pixar just always does well. It's like, it doesn't matter what scene they're doing. It's like, whether or not it be the montage of him trying on clothes, Ken trying on clothes, or whether it be the prison style scenes, they know how to an animation team that is rivaled by none, you've also got these people that just know how a prison scene should look, so they can make a room that is full of, you know, toys and stuff like that. It's not only with lighting, but just camera placement and stuff like that is just amazing. No one else can do it.
Absolutely.
Like they can.
I agree with you 100%. Now we have to address one more thing. Now we're in spoilers, because we did tease it. Javier Fernandez Peña.
Oh.
He is a new addition to the voices, and the reason why we saved it is because at one point in the film, Buzz is reset. And when he is reset into Spanish. And not only is he subtitled and speaks in complete Spanish, voiced by a new person, but the animation of his movement is brilliant.
It's just heart-stopping.
It is flamenco Buzz.
It is just the bit where he is dancing around shooting lasers at people is just...
It's
just brilliant.
Genius.
Just there is no way to describe how amazing it is. And just even the little things, like where he'll grab somebody and instead of doing what a normal person which is just push the wall, you know, push them to the wall beside him, he like does a spin and then like slams them into the wall
and his,
holding
the
chest.
Whole hands, the whole hand movements and everything. It is brilliant. It is worth the price of admission just for Spanish Buzz. And the funny thing is, you see a little bit of it in the trailer and it's not funny.
No.
It's when you actually see it in context and the relationship between Buzz and Jesse, which has always been kind of this unrequited love thing anyway, and how he deals with Senorita Jesse.
Yeah. You know? Two things I actually do want to bring up. Number one is what's wrong? Seriously, what is wrong with Woody? Because he just never seems to get the girls and doesn't seem to care.
Oh, because he's lost Bo Peep now as well.
No, but exactly. He's lost Bo Peep and now, you know, he gives away Jesse. It's like, dude, seriously.
Well, Jesse was always like his sister though. So that's, he was never going to have a relationship with Jesse.
And
Buzz and Jesse have always had a thing, but he was always, Bo Peep was his girl.
I know. And it kind of sucks that that was the one thing that they never quite finished.
Although in the opening scene, they actually make one mention of both.
Yeah, I know. And just that, you know, he's the sad lost, you know, sort of.
Because
kind of
we situation. Have to stress as well, and now we're in spoilers, the opening of this film, Andy's room is greatly reduced in toys. It's this is like the core group. As Andy's growing up, other toys have been given away. And so when they make mention of this in the opening scene, this is like the last group of toys.
Yeah.
And this is like his favorite toys. Mm-hmm. And they're the most famous ones. And so they actually do talk about, you know, the passing of friends. And I love the soldiers. How they're just like, our job is done, and they just leave.
Yeah. Well, as they say, and in such a true statement, they're Army toys are always the first to go. Dude. It's,
little green Army men first in the bin.
Yep, they will be gone out into the trash. They won't even be put in the attic.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I just thought we had to give Javier his moment because that was genius.
Yeah.
It was genius on behalf of Pixar. It was genius. I mean, his vocal was very good. It was very funny. He sounded a lot like Antonio Banderas.
Yeah.
I think they should have got Antonio Banderas, but he's probably under contract by DreamWorks.
Yeah.
But Javier did a great job. But it was the animation that really sold that. It was that whole flamboyant movement of everything that he did. Anyway, I think we'll move on. Anybody got anything else they want to bring up?
No, I had 2 points and I forgot what the other one was. So let's just move on.
All right, we'll just move on. In that case, we have to address one thing, which is a rumor that there was a rumor kicking around at one point that there was going to be another Toy Story next year.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's been squashed.
Mm, that's good.
Apparently,
I'm very happy.
The toys aren't finished yet, but we aren't going to have another Toy Story movie.
Yeah.
Apparently, before Cars, the short is going to be a Toy Story short.
Wow.
So before Cars, there is going to be a Buzz and Woody short, which is the short before Cars 2 next year. And that's where the rumor kind of started. And everybody kind of went, oh, this is going to be another Toy Story. No, it's just a short. And the director has actually said they might make a couple of shorts using the toys in various circumstances, but they don't plan another film. And in fact, Lee Unkrich actually said that he actually sees this as closure.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's done that way. It's spoken that way. It's done its piece.
It feels like closure. It feels like we're putting this to bed and we have reached conclusion. And that's all. Yes, Shane, you're going
to say? I think if they were going to make any shorts, they'd probably pack it into a Blu-ray disc or something.
Yeah, possibly. Exactly. Pop Shot has said movie of the year, Dave. So far, yes. This has been a bleak year.
Oh, we've had a few movies along the way that we've probably used.
I loved Harry Brown.
Yeah.
And that's up there. I would actually definitely, at this point, I would put Toy Story easily in the top five of the year.
Oh, dude. Yeah, for sure.
Easily.
It's definitely in the top
five.
Yeah.
Whether it's the film of the year, it's still too early to announce.
It's also difficult when you weigh out something like Harry Brown as opposed to that. They're two very different feels.
But you can also look at it, though, and I've always worked by this logic in my life, which is what did I have the most emotional connection with? What did I have the most visceral experience, I should say, or in other words, you know, which is the one that I enjoyed the most? You know, and I have to say that I got as much enjoyment in different ways, as much enjoyment from Harry Brown as I did from Toy Story 3, and I rate them right up there high. So far, this has not been last year. This has not been a year of District 9. It has not been a year of even Inglourious Basterds. It's been a wasteland. And I'm not even going to count Hurt Locker, because Hurt Locker, as far as I'm concerned, is last year.
Yeah,
we got it so late here, but it is a last year film. This year has been bleak, man. And at this point, I was actually listening to Slash Filmcast the other day, and they said even Iron Man 2, although enjoying it while watching it, it's drifted from memory already. There's not a lot of staying power behind it, you know? And you sit there and go, really, what has come out this year where we've just gone, oh my God, that is amazing? And so far, there's only been two, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'm missing something. I'm sure if I go back over the shows, there might be a couple more in there, but it's
I think that...
Kick-Ass.
Yeah. I think that there's definitely going to be a piece coming up on your website very soon about the top 10 picks of the first half of the year. I think that I'm going to go out and find them, because I reckon there's enough there. I reckon there's been that many. I just have to look.
We just have to dig back.
We're not very thinking very hard, but I have visual memories of about four or five that we have said best film of the year. So
Kick-Ass was definitely one we put up there. It's in my top five.
We saw something else around that time as well.
We did, and I can't remember what it was.
Toy Story.
Iron Man. Well, look, it's kind of, I loved Iron Man, and at the moment, yes, it's probably in the top five purely because there hasn't been anything else.
Yeah.
I think it would be moved out of the top five very quickly if we got some more quality cinema.
Hey, look, it's the first half of the year.
It's first half. We've got the second half of the year, and let's face it, the second half of the year is traditionally where the more serious films start to come out.
Yeah.
So we're going to start seeing the Christmas
A-game comes out.
Yeah, the A-game comes out because now we're getting towards Oscar season, so they want to start pushing out all the Oscar caliber stuff. So we're going to start seeing the serious cinema start coming now. Also, let's not forget, the summer season is not over yet.
Oh, dude, and don't forget, we have Inception coming very soon.
We've got Inception, we've got Predators, we've got something else that we talked about
we've
just recently.
Eclipse.
Oh, Eclipse! Eclipse.
Sorry.
Now, I just like to say on the record, there is a very good chance we may not be reviewing Eclipse. Now, the reason for this is because, as we reported last week, they're making changes to Breaking Dawn, which is the one we wanted to see because of its weirdness factor.
I was only watching 3 to actually...
get to 4. To,
exactly, to have the full storyline, to That's understand right. 4, to give it its full...
And as far as I'm concerned, if they're not going to go all out and freak us out and do all that weirdness in Part 4, then I don't want to invest my time in Part 3. If I... So we might skip Part 3, watch something else, like Karate Kid. Did I tell you it's a wasteland of cinema right now?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's wrap this up because we've got an after show from that is way, way popular. Now, I'm going to try this one more time because nobody paid attention last time, obviously. The good people at IINet have sent me two. I'm going to hold them up to camera this time. I'm on a different camera. All right, here we go. Two free passes to A Nightmare on Elm Street. Now, I didn't like it very much, but they are free. Okay.
And, dude, you know what? If they had been free, I'd probably go watch them again.
That's right.
Watch it again.
So I have these two free passes to Nightmare on Elm Street, and we are giving them away. First two emails into feedback@geekactually.com that has your full name and mailing address will get one pass each. So the first two emails, one pass each, and they're free. No strings attached, okay?
No strings attached. Walk in, give it to the person, and they will give you a tape.
And nobody bit on this, okay? Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, hate the movie or not, it's free!
Damn right.
So if you want a free pass to Nightmare on Elm Street, and it is playing in a cinema near you, these are valid for the run of the cinema of the film. You got to have to act on this quickly, because I don't think it's going to last forever at the cinema. So if, and you know, quite frankly, if they don't get taken, they're going to get binned. So two free passes, first two emails in, feedback@geekactually.com. You can have them. What are they saying? It's herpes.
Yes.
I love you, chat room. I do. I love you, chat room. All right. We're going to get ourselves out of here. If you agree or disagree with anything we have to say about our movie reviews or our tech or anything else, send your comments to feedback@geekactually.com, or even better, send us a voicemail on 02-8011-3167, and we'll even play you on the show, all right?
Yeah.
As long as, you know, you're interesting and on topic. But we'll play you on the show if you send us a voicemail. Just try and keep it under a minute if you can, please. Mm. And remember that we are going to be splitting the show up in 3 episodes. For the next 3 episodes, it's as normal. So just behave yourselves. All right, we will keep reminding you as we go. Remember, you can buy Geek Actually merchandise, which helps support the show, t-shirts, mugs, and so forth. cafepress.com.au/geekactually. Voicemails, feedback line. What have I forgotten? Have I forgotten anything?
Oh, there's me.
I'll get to you guys in a minute. I'm doing my own stuff first.
Well, that's what I thought you meant. You pointed at me. I was like, oh, what? Am I supposed to get a hint?
You don't think I'm going to plug your show, do you? I got a bone to pick with you about your show, actually.
Oh, God.
Here we go. I'm going to put this on air, too.
Oh, blamed on air.
I'm going to blame it. All right. First of all, let's explain what his show is, just so that everybody knows. Josh has actually spun platforms off into its own thing. It's no longer platforms.
Its own beast.
Its own beast. It is actually called DLC Live. It is found at rawdlc.com.
I'm really curious to know where you're going with this.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can find his podcast by searching on iTunes or looking at rawdlc.com. Okay, now that we've given you your plug, last week, just the night before your show, I said, I've got a story for you, and I told you about the red rings on the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Yeah? On your show.
You haven't clicked on the link.
When I actually watched your show, you actually said, I read somewhere on some site.
I was meaning actually seen it, actually. I hadn't actually remembered that. I did give you like a shout out on the actual link on the audio thing that says, thanks to Geek Actually for all the how it was set up and used. So, you know.
I am not offended. It's okay. I'm just joking with you.
But you had to take it live, didn't you?
I had to take it live.
You had to take it live.
You know, it's what I do.
It's what you do.
It's what I do.
It's what you do.
All right. Shane, where can people find more about you on the internet?
Yes. All you have to do is type in my full name into Facebook, Shane Robert Gregory. And I also write for rawdlc.com.
Well, that would be rawdlc.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And for everybody that wants to, the first episode, Beardless, is currently up in audio form on the actual site. There's also a link to watch the second half of the show from the live page. The second half of the show, because it basically, unfortunately, crashed on us. I learned that screensavers and live camera feeds do not mix.
Yeah,
so,
I couldn't tell you that.
Yeah, well, thanks. Okay, I've got to learn some of this stuff for myself. You've helped me with most of it, Dave, but yeah, every now and then, shit's just got to go wrong.
It does, it does. I'd just like to point out that Nordy in our chat room has said, because, you know, Ionit gave us these tickets, he says, so, Ionit hates you.
They just want to remind you where you stand. There's some tickets to a movie you've already seen.
Raggy says I should shred them.
Live on air, I noticed as well.
I'll tell you what, if they haven't gone, if people haven't claimed them and the, yeah, and the run finishes...
Do you have a shredder?
No, but we got scissors. We'll cut them up on air.
There we go.
Sounds all right, awesome. Josh, where can we find more about you?
Well, you know, rawdlc.com.
Wait, was that, hold on one second. Was that rawdlc.com?
That was rawdlc.com. I'm also writing for the site, though. I haven't done anything for the site.
Now, please note all of this plugging I'm giving you.
Yeah, oh, dude, every week I do. Every week I do. So, yes, there's that. There's actual pieces on this site as well, and of course here and also on our site. Our live stream, which is DLC Live, which you can find at the Raw DLC site. And of course, we've got an iTunes feed as well now. So everybody should look for DLC Live on iTunes and give us a review and subscribe to us, because that's what I want people to do. And don't forget to subscribe to Geek Actually while you're there if you haven't already. And if you haven't, what? Shame on you.
Well, thank you very much for that. Okay. And we also have two other friends that we want to plug now. First one, now, I'm not quite sure what their status is at this point. Well, you guys didn't talk about ABP. APB.
APB is a game. This is about my show.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Pop Shot, save that for DLC. I'm not sure what exactly their status is. I did go to their site the other day, and it is back up, but I think they're still having trouble. But do subscribe to their podcast and get it all ready so that when they do come back in force, you're there. And that, of course, is the Movie Fan House, or the Movie Fan Cast, as they're calling themselves now, moviefanhouse.com. It is a great podcast, but unfortunately it's down at the moment. But do keep it in mind. And, of course, we would be remiss to not mention our friends, the boys over at the Real Junkies podcast, who drink their tequila and review films, and they're a lot of fun. And shout-outs to all three who sent me birthday wishes on Twitter. Thank you very much, guys. You can find them at weekendronin.com, or you can search for it on iTunes, Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, and have some fun with them.
Let's just quickly also say Dave K. also had a birthday on
the Sunday. Oh, of course, yes. Dave, although... after the text messages I should have delayed it and brought it up in the after show. Oh, yeah, by the way, yes, Dave Kaziki also celebrated his birthday on the 24th. We have the same first name and the same birthday. It's kind of freaky, I know, but happy birthday to Dave Kaziki, and best wishes to him. Alright, I think that's it. I think we are done. I don't think we have anything else to spread our word about. We do have an after show coming up. I don't know, Josh, don't look at me like that. All right, we do have an after show coming up, which is all about Supernova. Mm. We have a lot of video because we shot a lot of interviews and stuff. And so stick with us if you're in the live show. If you're on the audio podcast, you will hear the podcast on Wednesday. And the videos will be on YouTube for you to have a look at. In the meantime, go see more movies, guys. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will talk to you all next week. We'll be right back.